by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, man, that was exhausting. Did you see all the chit-chat between Nicole and me during your newscast?
I not only saw it, but I actually heard it through the headphones.
It was just exhausting.
Do you see what I have to go through while I'm doing news?
My goodness.
I try to just...
Do you see what I have to go through while you're doing
the better
news?
Headphones.
What on earth were you doing?
Well, I have a story in the news here about a 42-year-old woman who's been nabbed after a brazen crustacean heist at a Red Lobster. Her name's Kimberly Gable. She was drunk and causing a scene Saturday at a Red Lobster down in Florida. And the manager asked her to leave for disturbing other customers. She was cursing as she headed to the front door, but before leaving, she proceeded to reach into a water tank containing a live lobster, grabbed the lobster, and ran out of the restaurant. And responding to a 911 call, a deputy located her. She smelled of booze. She was slurring her words. She continued to curse. She said she didn't know where the pilfered lobster was. She said she was blacked out drunk, and she did not care because she didn't do anything wrong, she said. So she's been arrested. And I don't know if this has to do with anything, but jailers have noted that she has tattoos on her back of dragon and koi fish. Okay, so you're probably wondering, why was this so exhausting?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, because...
Is she part of the Liberate the Lobster crowd, or
no,
what?
No, because I just saw this story, and so I had to find this song here. Because... Here, let me hand you this photo.
Okay.
This 42-year-old drunk lobster stealer looks exactly like Sammy Hagar.
After a long, long night.
Yeah. But doesn't she? Doesn't she look just like Sammy Hagar? So then Nicole and I, well, what's the best Sammy Hagar song? A little solo or with Van Halen? And we're looking, we're calling back and forth while you're doing your newscast.
That's what this was about?
Yes, I wanted to find the best Sammy Hagar song.
And for some reason, every song made him laugh out loud.
Yeah. So I'm just amused by how much this woman looks like Sammy Hagar.
Oh, no.
She actually does. Yeah, she looks like she spent a little too much time in Cabo Wabo. Hey, I like this song. I'm glad we picked this one. The thing that's cool about this is so much of Van Halen was, big guitar-driven. Eddie Van Halen, one of the best guitarists on the planet. And this is one of their few keyboard-driven songs. And I tend to like keyboard songs better than anything. So, anyway, that's why I'm so exhausted. Okay?
Well, you know what I'm thinking of? One of our lovely listeners named McKenna told me that I should eat when I was in Vegas. She suggested I go to Cabo Wabo. Have you gone?
Probably. I don't know. I'm going to say yes. It sounds vaguely familiar.
Sammy Hagar
it's
restaurant.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's actually in Cabo most New Year's Eve.
Yeah. And he seems like he's quite the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He's made so much money. He's like a Jimmy Buffett in how he's marketed the Cabo thing. And there's a bitter split between him and Van Halen because...
Remember that.
Yeah, and it was all over financial stuff. I don't remember the details of it. So anyway, but that's the extent we go to try to maximize every moment of this show. Since you are so nice to listen to us every afternoon, we are every second of every day just trying to optimize everything. So the lobster stealer, she looks like Sammy Hagar. That's the bottom line there. Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
One of the things we've talked about an awful lot is that sanctuary status around here has been disastrous in so many respects. And, you look at the gang problem, especially down in the Burien area, South King County. And if you heard my interview when King County Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik was on my show a few weeks ago, she announced that they're starting a new gang unit. And I said, well, how many of these gang members are illegals? We don't know. Why don't we know? Because they're not allowed to even ask. They have on King County Jail intake forms immigration status or citizenship status. I don't remember the phrase. But it's always left blank. It's been left blank for a decade or more. But it's still on the form. They're not allowed to ask the question. To which I ask, how can you solve a problem if you don't know what the problem is? If the powers of politics and political correctness are more powerful than truth and reason and data. Because if illegals are a huge part of the drug and gang problem, as everybody, every cop knows that that's the truth. But they have this plausible deniability. They can tell us about how wonderful sanctuary policy is, but they don't have anything to refute or to counterbalance that because they don't keep the data. But when an illegal goes on to commit a horrible crime, that usually comes out. And we usually find out about it. And we've told you several of those stories the last couple of years. And there's another one in the news today. A 23-year-old guy, Luis, and this is not local, this one, but it illustrates the problem of sanctuary that is embraced in the county, and most cities, and statewide. 23-year-old Luis Rodrigo Perez, an illegal immigrant who was previously jailed and released in New Jersey. He was jailed on a domestic violence charge. And at the time, Immigration and Customs, ICE, they put in a detainer on him. But because he was in a sanctuary city, the request was not honored. The agency was not notified when he was let go. And Luis Rodrigo Perez now has, after being released, because he could have been deported if the ICE detainer was honored. If the jail had said, hey, we got an illegal here, and ICE could have taken him and started deportation proceedings. But political correctness is more important. And he now has murdered three people, allegedly. He's been charged with fatally shooting two men and wounding two others on November 1st. And then court documents say that he shot and killed a woman the next day. And the executive director of ICE, Corey Price, said, yet again, an ICE detainer was ignored and a dangerous criminal alien was released to the streets and is now charged with killing three people. Had ICE's detainer request in December 2017 been honored by Middlesex County Jail, Luis Rodrigo Perez would have been placed in deportation proceedings and likely sent home to his country, and three innocent people might be alive today. It is past time that localities realize the perils of dangerous sanctuary policies and resume their primary goal of protecting their residents, meaning the citizens. Yeah. But again, this will all fall on deaf ears with Jay Inslee and Dow Constein and Jenny Durkin and every other mayor and county exec around here because they continue to tout the benefits of something, but they insist on not gathering any data that would be able to refute the benefits that they cite. Because when it comes to politics around here, I'm telling you, maybe as much as any place in the country, all of our politicians exhibit that ignorance is our lack of bliss. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top trending.
As I told you at noon, the news that came out earlier today that Amazon is putting HQ2 in Queens, the borough of Queens in New York, and in suburban Washington, D.C., in Virginia. It's absolutely baffling to me for one primary reason. And that is that I thought one reason that Amazon was so desperate to get the heck out of Seattle was because they wanted to get away from the lunatic politics around here. and particularly people like Kshama Sawant.
No, Jeff Bezos is our enemy. He is our enemy. And we have to fight big business. The question is, will we have elected representatives who will fight with us or not?
So Sawant declares that a major employer, the major employer in our region, Amazon, 50,000 employees, economic driver like we've never seen, even, you know, as big as Boeing was back in the, you know, 60s and 70s, Amazon's much bigger. And they're demonized by local lunatic politicians. So I thought, well, maybe Amazon wants to have an option in case things get even crazier here in Seattle. Maybe they just want to have a place where they can move lock, stock, and barrel out of Seattle. But Queens, where Alexandria Cortez Ocasio was just elected to Congress, the 28-year-old, who, by the way, I just found this out this afternoon. Last week she said, I can't even afford an apartment in D.C. until I start collecting my congressional salary in January. An absolute lie. Or her campaign financial documents were a lie, because she has well over $15,000 saved, somewhere between $15,000 and $50,000, according to the financial documents she had to file. So average rent in the D.C. area is $2,700 a month, which is a lot. It's insane. But a congressperson-elect could afford 3 months rent if she has somewhere between $15,000 and $50,000. So she was just lying when she said she can't afford rent between now and inauguration. Or, now, you're not inaugurated to Congress. You're just installed? I don't know what you are. But anyway, so Cortez, or Ocasio-Cortez, she has gone on an absolute tweet storm about Amazon. And one of them, the guy said it was like a socialist word salad. She said, we need to focus on good health care, living wages, affordable rent. Corporations that offer none of those things should be met with skepticism. It's possible to establish economic partnerships with real opportunities. And it just went on and on. But it was like, I'm just going to pull every socialist, leftist keyword, and I'm going to put them all together in a tweet. But then she went on and on. Minutes after this was reported last night by the Wall Street Journal, we've been getting calls and outreach from Queens residents all day about this. The community's response, outrage. So Amazon is going to put bring 25,000 jobs to Queens. They say a lot of them are going to be six-figure, but certainly there will be a lot of support jobs that would be working-class jobs. For every job Amazon creates directly, they create even more indirectly by food service workers and everyone else in the neighborhood and around there. But she decided within moments of the announcement that she was going to lead the outrage parade against Amazon. So she went on to tweet, Amazon is a billion-dollar company. The idea that it will receive hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks at a time when our subway is crumbling and our communities need more investment, not less, is extremely concerning to residents here. As I said a couple hours ago, the New York City subway system gets more public money than the GDP of many nations. If the subway is crumbling, it's because of the abject failure of leftist politics in the city. It is, it's only crumbling, not for a lack of money. But of course, for a socialist, she will use that lie so that people will have to pay more taxes to bolster the subway. And all it is throwing the money down a subway pit when you do that. Then she says, when we talk on Twitter, when we talk about bringing jobs to the community, we need to dig deep. Has the company promised to hire in the existing community? What's the quality of jobs? How many are promised? Are these jobs low wage or high wage? Are they their benefits? Can people collectively bargain? So she wants union. Amazon is rabidly anti-union. None of this is her business as a U.S. member of Congress. And What a slap in the face to the Democrats who negotiated this. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, Cuomo, the governor of the state. And she's really trashing them by saying that they obviously didn't do any of their due diligence. The 28-year-old bartender knows a lot more about all of this. And my point being, oh, here's one more tweet from her. Displacement is not community development. Investing in luxury condos is not the same thing as investing in people and families. Shuffling working class people out of a community does not improve their quality of life. Again, what's your party done to lift up the quality of life in control of most of city government? Bloomberg was a rhino. Giuliani was a Republican. And New York City thrived under Giuliani. But under the rest of their one-party rule, they've created whatever it is she's complaining about. But it just makes me wonder, what in the world is Amazon thinking? Choosing, when they know how a nobody like Sawant, and Sawant is a nobody, but a nobody who's got a loud enough voice can, you know, gin up enough outrage so that it makes a corporation's life very difficult. And with that head tax and everything else, Amazon had to just deal with a lot of non-business-related nonsense, a lot of stuff that did not accrue to their bottom line. And you go from a nothing Seattle City Council member, and now you're going into the borough that has a member of the U.S. Congress who's figured out how to be as squeaky a wheel as Sawant. And she's already trying to turn the community against the company. I do not understand what Amazon was thinking, making this decision after, and they knew that it was going to be Ocasio-Cortez after the primaries months and months and months ago. The election last week was just formality for her. So why they would choose, of all the places that wanted their business, and I know they want to be close to Wall Street and all of that, just like in Virginia, they want to be close to D.C. and getting federal contracts and federal power. And now they have two senators in Virginia, two in New York, and two in Washington State that they own. They own them because that's the kind of power Amazon wields. And I know that they like having senators, but why they would choose to go into a borough where they have maybe the biggest whack job in all of Congress already shouting them down? Man, that could be a decision they regret. I do not understand that at all. But Jeff Bezos tends to make good long-term decisions. So his money machine will probably continue to prosper, even though he's going into this lion's den that Ocasio-Cortez is trying to create for them. That is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, my goodness. We have a great batch of awesome audio. We'll check the news for you and get to our favorite sound bites of the day coming up next. It is that time of the day when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
So Andrea Mitchell on NBC and MSNBC, she used to be somewhat of a journalist back in the day. She was married to Alan Greenspan, who was the Federal Reserve guy. I think she still is. But man, talk about descending into fake news. Because down in Florida, they're doing recounts. The governor's race, the Senate race, they are both so close. And there is, I mean, even Democrats are admitting that in Broward County, that the woman who's the election supervisor, her entire career has been riddled with election fraud and incompetence. And when even the Democrats down there are saying, yeah, there's, you know, black eye on us, this is really awful, you know that it's bad. So this is what passes for news, though, on MSNBC. Andrea Mitchell, here's what she said about that election supervisor in Broward County.
Number 3.
And the recount itself, Andrea.
And we should also point out that Brenda Snipes in Broward County is a Republican appointed by former governor, then Governor Jeb Bush. So she was put in by a Republican governor after the mess that we all remember from 2000. And she's hardly a Democratic official or someone doing the bidding of the Democratic candidates there.
That is a blatant lie by somebody who used to be a journalist. That election supervisor, was she appointed by Jeb Bush? Yes. But she has run four times for election supervisor as a Democrat and been elected four times by the voters. And for Andrea Mitchell to say she is hardly a Democrat, she is, I mean, she said she is a Republican, she's hardly a Democrat, that is just a provable, demonstrable lie. And so when you talk about fake news, so the whole point of Andrea Mitchell saying that is, well, if she's incompetent and if she's stealing this election, she's stealing it from her own party. No, she's not. Why would Andrea Mitchell, with the journalistic chops she used to display, just be a liar now? And that's why there are reasonable accusations on a regular basis of fake news, because of frauds like Andrea Mitchell. Okay, number two in our awesome audio. Man, this is really something. At the campfire down in California, a 93-year-old woman stepped out on her front porch hoping somebody might see her, and then her garbage man showed up. Her name is Margaret Newsom. And her caregiver was already gone for the day. She was very frightened that she was going to be consumed with her house in that blaze. And that's when she went out on the porch, just hoping to catch anyone's eye. Her garbage man came to the rescue. Here's the local TV station down there with Margaret.
I got up as usual, went and had some oatmeal as usual. And I turned the TV on, and then they said that there was a fire going into paradise.
93 years old. By the way, that's a good endorsement to have oatmeal every morning right there. And Dane Ray Cummins is the waste management driver.
I've been up there 8 years, and I just picked the people that I knew were older, and I tried to stop and help them and let them know that they were coming and make sure they're getting out.
And so adorable Margaret, she went outside. And by the way, she has a broken back, too.
So I went out and was standing on the front porch when this great big green monster drove up. He said, get in the house, get your things together quick, and we'll get out of here.
And so that's when the garbage man helped her into the truck and drove her 5 hours to safety.
They lifted her, and we lifted her, and we just scooted her on the seat and put the seatbelt on her and made sure she was up there far enough so she wouldn't fall out on either side. And that was it. We're on the road.
And in that long ride, she got to tell him lots of things, like her singing career when she was a younger woman.
The Rat Pack. Wonderful, wonderful man.
And.
Oh, sorry. I left the and in there. I was quick at it.
She also witnessed Pearl Harbor.
A Japanese plane came over. He was so low that I could see the pilot.
The garbage man loved hearing her stories.
I wish I'd known her when she was younger. I'd have married her. You know what I mean? The best conversation I've had in the truck in ever.
Nice.
I like that guy.
At Oklahoma State University, their football coach is Mike Gundy. He is known for all kinds of funny moments. This is maybe the best. This is from 2007 when he thought the media was unfairly attacking one of his players.
That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me.
Okay, that was 11 years ago. He has another one this week. They asked him about all these college players who transfer from one school to another to find a better situation.
Number one.
Is that the biggest difference in players these days? It seems like transferring is a lot easier to A lot easier for guys to do than maybe it was back in the day.
Well, I think we live in a world where people are non-committal. We allow liberalism to say, hey, I can just do what I want and I don't have to really be tough and fight through it. And you see that with young people because it's an option they're given. We weren't given that option when we were growing up. We were told what to do. We did it the right way, or you go figure it out on your own. And in the world today, there's a lot of entitlement. I'm a firm believer in the snowflake. I think it's setting there. And I'm not talking about Tabo. Tabo and I have had multiple good talks. I'm talking about every millennial young person, Generation Z, I think is what they call them.
Millennials and snowflakes destroy people sticking things out. All of our favorite sound bites brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash. Today's sign is next.
And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day.
And still more show to go with today's edition of
Today's Sign that the end is near.
Today's sign, the world is soon coming to an end. Let's start in the world of the National Basketball Association. The best team in the NBA the last couple years has been the Golden State Warriors. Hottest ticket in all of the Bay Area. How hot is the ticket? Well, the Golden State Warriors have just sent out an email offering fans a pass to get into the arena for home games for $100. Now, there's only one problem. You won't be able to access any of the seating area where you can actually watch the game. I'm serious about this. They said for $100 a month, you will be able to get in, sit in the restaurants and bars that are on the outer concourses of the arena. It's called an in-the-building pass. They play between 5 and 7 home games a month, so your cover fee is going to be anywhere between about $14 and $20 to get in to only access the bars and restaurants in the arena. A Warriors spokesperson said the team plans to sell about 200 of the monthly passes, and once you sign up, their tentacles are in you. Wait, do tentacles go in you? Tentacles, they put suction cups on you. What am I trying to say? Their Tinder hooks are in you. It'll auto-renew every month for another $100 through the end of the regular season. And then you're not even going to be able to get into the bars and restaurants for the postseason games. How insane is that? There are restaurants and bars right across the street that have big screens. But that's how desperate some people... Oh, yeah, I was at the game last night. But they aren't going to tell people that they weren't able to see any of the game except on TV like everybody else. Insanity. Next up in today's sign, oh, finally some good news. Las Cruces, New Mexico has set the world record for the largest serving of nachos. It happened Saturday night at the Plaza de la Cruces during a big nacho event that they have in Las Cruces. That's my retirement goal. I want to retire in a place that actually has nacho events. I know what you're thinking. That's nacho for me. No, it is. It would be. It weighed 5,039 pounds and was 110 feet long. Thousands of curious spectators came to witness the spectacle and to help devour the cheesy chip concoction. 20 volunteers helped spread truckloads of bags of tortilla chips, tons of cheese, mountains of green chili and salsa, and giant scoops of sour cream. That's quite an accomplishment there. Good for them. Good for everybody down in Las Cruces. I am proud of every single one of you. And then finally in today's sign, look, we're all going to die. But are all of us truly living? Because a man down in Florida, he can say that he has truly, truly lived. According to surveillance video, inside and outside of a restaurant, let me lay out the nighttime itinerary for this guy down in Florida, who at this point is still unidentified. At first, he rode his bike up to this restaurant and pedaled around the parking lot for 10 minutes. Then he slipped in through a back gate. After wandering for a while, so he wandered for a bit, and then he opened a door to a shed that for some reason was unlocked. He removed the odds and ends in the shed one by one. Then the man somehow gained access to a restaurant bathroom, and they don't explain how he did all of this. But when he came out of the bathroom, he was naked. And then in the closed restaurant, he sat at one of the picnic tables and dug into a meal he brought with him. Maruchan instant lunch ramen. He also was playing the bongos while naked. Restaurant manager, he came in with pants on, but he rode off on the bike without pants. He spray painted a few chairs, the bongos, and a pickle jar, but they say his handiwork was barely noticeable. The manager said everything was put back so neatly, it was 4 hours before anyone noticed that he had even been there. And then, in an unrelated incident at the same restaurant, there was another guy that they caught on video who enjoyed a plate of chicken wings and some beer. That guy stole about $500 worth of stuff, including a laptop, tablet, and a grocery bag filled with beer. Police say even though the two incidents happened back to back, they are not connected. What are the odds of that? Maybe they should start locking their door at this restaurant. Just a thought, just tossing it out. A little free advice. But come on. Ride your bike, get naked in a bathroom, and eat some instant ramen while naked playing the bongos? Now that's living. And it also is today's sign. The end is near. I got to get out of here because I have said everything that I have to say for today.
Sorry.
But don't worry. I'm going to think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's show. Ron Dodgeville's coming up next, and we will see you back here at high noon. Hello.
I thought I'd cut out early, make this a long weekend.
It's Tuesday.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.